And welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care and the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay. As you know, we had the Cromwell Media holiday party last night. So, you know, that got a little wild, I stayed longer than you did. In fact, I stayed longer than both of you did, but not too much longer. So, but then I came home and we have all these like chocolates and stuff that were sent that I've been not touching. And then I just absolutely went nuts on them. So I have like a chocolate hangover right now.
Hey, that's good. It's that time of year, man.
Really? Yes, it is that time of year, but I need to stop.
Nick Keyser, how are you?
I'm good. Are we sure it's a chocolate hangover?
Oh.
Yeah. Honestly, a sugar, like huge doses of sugar, I think make me feel worse than anything.
Dr. Yes. Rex Road.
Maybe this is, well, you know, maybe this is just being of a certain age, but that is something that I think affects me more than anything. Now, it's not like I was, doing, fireball shots last night, doing keg stands at the party, but it was fun. Nick, I hope my wife, she talked to you and your fiance for a long time. I'm sure she was ripping me a fair amount, but I hope that went all right.
Actually, not at all. No ripping of Joe Rexrod whatsoever.
Oh boy.
Really?
Nope.
Now I need to know what's wrong with her. Okay.
Yeah, that could be concerning.
I'll revisit this.
That's right. We got a lot to get to on the program today. We'll be joined by Ryan Callahan from Go Balls 24/7 here in just a few minutes at 6:15. We'll recap Tennessee's recruiting class. Vol Twitter, interesting place on early signing period day. They were going nuts yesterday, so we'll get into some of that with Ryan at 6:15. Andrew Burnett, Preds head coach, at 7:15 as the Preds take on the Flyers tonight on the road. And Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, his weekly visit from 8 to 8:30 today, talking Titans and all things NFL. So a lot to get to on the program. We'll take your thoughts all show long, 615-737-1025. Joe, some interesting news at Titans practice yesterday. Number one, it looks like Ryan Tannehill will be the guy if Will Levis can't go on Sunday against Seattle, which not a huge surprise there, but they came out and actually said it yesterday. So Tannehill will be the guy if Levis can't go. And Caleb Farley back on the practice field for the Titans yesterday as well. And also Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, season-ending IR. So a lot going on with Titans and their transaction yesterday. But Caleb Farley back on the field. Ryan Tannehill is going to be the guy on Sunday if Will Levis can't go. And NWI to the IR. There's so much going on that I forgot what happened for a second.
Yeah, no, I mean, well, and the NWI thing, someone asked me this, and I did not see it Sunday. I did not notice, like, did he miss the end of the game? I didn't notice, but it's a hand injury. So didn't see when it happened, but of course, as anybody knows, you put on IR right now, that means you're done for the year and potentially done for, done in Nashville. TD last night, almost kind of like gave me a hug, NWI, man, you all right?
One out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but, that'll be interesting with him. First of all, just, I personally think that, if you can have him back, I think he's a great guy in the locker room and he's a solid player and you just want him to be down. It's not his fault, where he is in the pecking order. He's going to do as much as he can to get on the field. You just want it harder for him to play. But I would, if I were the Titans, the price is going to be right. I can promise you that if I was the Titans, I would be interested in bringing him back, but it's possible that he could find a better opportunity somewhere else. He did not last time he was out there. So could be the end of the NWI era. We will see about that. And it was really cool to see, Caleb Farley just running around. I'm just watching the videos of practice. Cause that guy's been through so much. It's really unbelievable how much that guy's been through. So don't know what it means. I wouldn't make too much of it from an impact on the Titans at any point, you know, angle, but good for him.
Yeah, good for him to get back out there. Like you said, he's been through a lot on the field and off the field this year. And, you know, when we start talking about the back stuff with him, you know, anytime you could see him back out there was good. And look, just, you know, obviously I'm not a medical expert. Just from my eyeballs watching the videos of him being on the field, it looked like he was moving around pretty well out there. So that was good to see. So, you know, I don't know that that means that he's going to play at any point this regular season here, but the fact that he's back up on the field is good. And it's good to see him back out there, and we'll see what that means for him and his career as they move forward here. Joe, another guy I was wondering about yesterday, and he talked about this a little bit with some of the media. You know, Danico Autry has 11 sacks this year. He's 33 years old. You know, we've been talking about him and how much of an impact he's had on the Titans defense for a while. 11 sacks, his contract is running out at 33 years old. So, like, conventional wisdom says that it's probably time to move on, at least from my opinion, in terms of, like, just if you're traditionally looking at this situation, you look at the age and then the contract coming up, and a lot of times that's when people, you know, cut guys this loose. What about in Danico Autry's case? You know, the numbers would suggest it doesn't look like he's slowing down that much at the age of 33. How much interest do you think there should be for the Titans to bring him back?
Well, I think plenty if the price is right. Again, and I guess with him, it's not the same thing. You know, we're talking about the NWI, you know. I mean, I think, but I don't know. It's really interesting. You get to that age and, you know, you could see guys like this struggle to find a lot out there. But, I mean, all this guy does is just go out there and beat the crap out of people every week, you know, and make plays. I mean, I absolutely, and he, not just going into the year, for most of the year, is convinced, you know, this will be it for Danico Autry. It makes sense. If just a tremendous three-year run. Talk about getting what, for all the, you know, bad signings, bad choices, you know, bad return on investment. Talk about massive return on investment here with Danico Autry. Just a fantastic signing. One of the best signings John Robinson had, honestly, free agent signings. When you think about what he did, and even just like just the first year, you get the one seed, and he's a big part of that. And he's still just out there getting it done. So, I mean, to me, if it works out that you can do another year or two with him, I think why not? Why wouldn't you? I mean, he and Simmons have a good thing going. And I don't think it's going to cost you a ton, but maybe someone else out there, you know, really likes him for a year in their system and wants to overpay him. That'd be great for him.
Yeah, it would be great for him. I do think, though, that there's a chance there for the Titans if they wanted to bring him back. Maybe that works in their favor just because he is 33 and he'll be 34 next July. So, I mean, traditionally, guys like that are not getting big money. Now, traditionally also, Joe, guys who are 33 years old aren't putting up 11 sacks in a season either. So there's that part of it, too, that you got to consider if you're another team out there. But I do wonder, you know, what that looks like. You know, if I'm the Titans, and really probably if I'm anybody else, it's not going to be much more than like a one-year deal or a two-year deal where you can pretty easily get out of it after 1 year, just based on, you know, the timeline of his career right now. But, you know, at 34 next July, does the age bring the price down to a point where that makes a lot of sense for the Titans? He did say yesterday, Joe, that he wanted to come back and wanted to be a member of the Titans.
Yeah, well, it makes sense. I mean, he's comfortable in this defense, comfortable with the teammates. I mean, there's a guy who doesn't say much, man, Danico Autry. You know, he just kind of goes out there and gets it done. So, yeah, I mean, that's one of those things for next year that has kind of materialized. Is like, well, maybe that would make sense. I mean, I guess, you know, we've been talking all year about the Derrick Henry, and maybe it's sort of like he's like the Derrick Henry situation on the defense a little bit. And yeah, it would be like a, you know, like a 2 year deal that's really a 1 year deal kind of thing, you know. But hey, yeah, as far as I know, he's got double digit sacks coming in the next 2 years.
He's been outstanding. He really has. And, you know, I know the defense as a whole, it's not been as good this year as we thought it would be and expected it to be. And look, even Autry has had some games this year where the impact hasn't quite been what you're looking for, but the whole picture looks pretty good with Danico Autry and has ever since basically the moment he walked through the door here. Simmons, obviously, you've signed him in what you think is the prime of his career. Harold Landry feels like he's coming on a little bit towards the end of the season here. So there are things to feel good about on that side of the ball, particularly on the line there. I do wonder, like Arden Key, what does that look like? What does that spot look like next year for the Titans in terms of trying to find another pass rusher that has a little bit more consistency to him?
That it just hasn't been. You kind of see it's in, I think with him, you can kind of see the whole thing. You can see why, like, the Titans signed him, and you can also see why he keeps bouncing around. It's just, it's not consistent enough. There's definitely talent there. I mean, I think Arden Key, I think he brings a ton of, like, energy and positivity to a room. I mean, he, and that's great. Like in camp, I think that guy probably helped a lot of people get through camp. And there's some value in that. Plus, he was amazing. He was like, holy crap, he's dominated this starting left tackle in the NFL. Look at this guy, but
How good is Arden Key? He's torching Andre Dillard every day.
That's first round pick Andre Dillard. I mean,
That's
what,
right.
holy cow. But yeah, I mean, you'd like to be a little better. I will say, like for next year, one thing that I think we're seeing for sure right now is, Harold Landry should be primed for a big year next year, which, he's paid to have one, but that's one of those things where with his deal and everything, I'm looking at it like, okay, how's that going to go? But I think now, if you're the Titans, you got to be excited about what he's going to be now with a full off season, put that knee way behind him, way in the rear view. I mean, the way he's playing now, not just that he's getting sacks and stuff, but he's back to, like, he's just everywhere, He's around the ball all the time. So, I mean, you feel good about that. Landry, Autry, Simmons, and then yeah, I think you'd like to, and maybe it is a pick somewhere in there, to address that. It's just that, as we know, there's just so many needs.
Lot of needs. We're off and running today on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Ryan Callahan, Go Vols 24/7. Get an update on Tennessee's recruiting day yesterday and some transfer portal activity as well. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you. On this Thursday morning, taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. The Vols, with an interesting day yesterday. Vol Twitter, always just a beautiful place. It was again yesterday. And to help us talk about some Tennessee Volunteers recruiting and the day they had yesterday, let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our buddy Ryan Callahan from Go Vols 24/7. Ryan, good morning, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're awesome. Appreciate you
Good.
taking time to be with us. So, Ryan, how would you describe the day that Tennessee had yesterday with recruiting, the early signing period? It was, to me, anyway, just a little bit uneventful, which I guess in some ways is probably a good thing for Tennessee.
Yeah, you took the word right out of my mouth. Literally, it was uneventful. It was a pretty quiet day. As expected, though, really by the time we got to yesterday morning, the possibilities that were out there for Tennessee to add to its class on signing day were kind of out the window by that point. They did start the day with a pretty big addition before signing day officially even started at 7 a.m. Eastern, with getting Jermod McCoy, the Oregon State cornerback transfer. He announced his commitment just before 7 o'clock that morning. So got that one officially announced, and that's as big of a pickup for next season as probably anybody they would have added yesterday, if not bigger. So really good news there for Tennessee. But yeah, for the signing class, they were mostly the hay was in the barn by that point, and they pursued some other guys down the stretch. But even then, aside from Jordan Seaton, the five-star offensive tackle, who as of now has yet to sign, so you can't say he's officially off the board, but picked Colorado initially a couple weeks ago, aside from him, they've not really had a lot of big names to pursue down the stretch. So it's been kind of a quiet finish, but overall, they still finished with a good class, 13th as of right now in the 24/7 Sports composite rankings, and still, a lot of good players in this class that I think are going to help Tennessee quite a bit over the next few years. But just some missed opportunities in this class, and that includes kind of a quiet finish that they didn't really add anybody highly ranked over the past few months.
Yeah, Jordan Seaton stands on the table for Colorado, and he's like, "Well, maybe I won't go to Colorado after all." So that's an interesting one. But so apparently, what that looks like, are Oregon and Maryland are battling for him now? Is that the apparently the word?
Yeah, Maryland is definitely the one that we've heard the most. I've not heard as much Oregon, but there's people are trying to figure out who else is really in that one. Tennessee has at least been in communication with Jordan Seaton. I don't know how much is going to come of that, but that they're still in the picture at least. So, we'll see where that one goes. I'm not going to be surprised by anything in that one at this point. It's been such a chaotic recruitment. I mean, he goes into his announcement day a couple of weeks ago, and everyone's thinking, most people are thinking it's Tennessee, but everyone's thinking it's going to come down to Tennessee, Oregon, and Ohio State, and he picks Colorado on national TV at that, in an announcement that no one knew was happening on national TV. So it's just been a weird recruitment, certainly down the stretch. It's at this point, any curveball he throws at people, no one's going to be caught off guard by that anymore.
So I do this every year, Ryan, and I think a lot of people can relate. Signing day, you look at who, the top players, and then you wonder about them next year. And then a year later, like, oh yeah, that guy was never going to play as a freshman, But I do wonder about a couple, and not just freshmen, but of the additions, because that's what it is now, right? It's like the combo portal high school recruiting classes. So, first of all, you mentioned McCoy. I definitely would think he has a great chance to be a starting corner next year. McCoy, Jermod McCoy, Holden stays. Now, he's the transfer tight end. I assume he also should have a significant role. What about Jordan Ross on the edge? And then what about Mike Matthews at receiver? Do you think those two freshmen coming in are good enough to come right in? They've had other good receivers, maybe not this level of receiver, right, in these recent classes.
Yeah, it's really interesting you bring that up. I was just talking with someone about this last night. Here's where I am with this in regard to Tennessee. They've not shown a tendency to want to start freshmen that way,
yeah.
But they've not had many guys like this. So this is going to be a really interesting test case for them. I think Mike Matthews would have the better chance maybe, but it would depend on the opportunity, and that will probably depend on whether Brew McCoy comes back and what else they do in the transfer portal. They are involved with a wide receiver right now, Tulane wide receiver Chris Brazel, trying to get him. He would potentially be a plug-and-play starter to replace Ramel Keaton, and that would kind of allow them to keep everything mostly intact. If Brew McCoy comes back, you pretty much have your starting lineup there. And that would be bad news for Mike Matthews if he wants to start as a true freshman. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out. So I think he will play. I will be surprised if he doesn't play a good bit as a true freshman. But as far as starting goes, I'm a little skeptical of that. And then in Jordan Ross, the biggest problem for him is not that he's not talented, because he really is, and he had a good senior season. I just think he's coming into a position group that doesn't set up extremely well for him, because he's behind James Pierce. And then Joshua Joseph is at that position, and they've got Caleb Herring, who played a little bit as a true freshman this year as well. So, they've just got some depth at that position. It's really odd that Tennessee has done this good of a job of stacking talent, but more so than anywhere else on the roster, Tennessee has some, late 90s Tennessee level talent at the edge rusher position. So they really are doing a good job at that position. And that's maybe the downside for Jordan Ross, is that he's got, it's a good situation for him where he can come in and learn and still maybe get on the field with the way Rodney Garner rotates guys, but probably not a day one starter, but a guy that can definitely get on the field if he shows he's ready to play.
Ryan Callahan with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Ryan, how do you view the quarterback position as a whole right now for the Vols? Obviously, Nico taking over next year. Merklinger added yesterday as a four-star out of Savannah, Georgia. But overall, what do you make of kind of the depth and the quality of the quarterback room for the Vols?
Not ideal, and it wasn't this year either, obviously, with Joe Milton and Nico Iamaleava being the only two scholarship quarterbacks. But they got through this year without a catastrophe, at least so far. Let's see if Joe Milton opts out of the bowl game and leaves them with one scholarship quarterback. That could always set up a disaster. But so far they've gotten through this year, and I think their plan right now, well, not their plan, but maybe just what they have to do, and Josh Heupel kind of alluded to this yesterday, they might have to do the same thing again with two scholarship quarterbacks, and they do have Gaston Moore the walk-on who followed them from USF and that they trust a lot and that knows the offense, who they can kind of rely on as a third quarterback and maybe even the backup to start next season. That'll be interesting, too. Will they give Jake Merklinger, the true freshman, the backup job just because he's on scholarship, or will Gaston Moore initially be the number two? That'll be maybe an interesting sort of competition during the offseason because you do have to get a freshman up to speed and ready to go into a game. But they do have two guys, and that's not an ideal situation. But it's such a tricky situation, too, because most, if not every quarterback that you find in the transfer portal is looking to play. And if you go out there looking for a depth guy, it's going to be hard. So I don't know that they're going to find a fit to come in behind Nico Iamaliava, who, of course, you know, everyone's heard about the reported NIL deal and everything. No one's going to believe they can beat him out for the starting job. So if you're trying to sell that opportunity to someone, it's not going to be very attractive. And if there's someone out there looking for just a backup job, you know, he's probably not very good, and B, that's probably a 1 in 1,000 player that's not looking to play in the transfer portal. So I think they might have to ride it out one more year before they add a 2025 quarterback and get back to three scholarship players there. But we'll see. They'll at least look at all options. But we asked Josh Heupel about that yesterday. Is it hard to get another quarterback with a guy like Nico at the top of the depth chart? And his answer was, yes, sir, it is. And that's an unusual answer for Josh Heupel, but definitely the funniest moment of his press conference on signing day.
Yeah. So, Ryan, you mentioned Joe Milton. I've taken no word as confirmation he's playing. I mean, they're practicing now, preparing for Iowa. You think it's still possible he ends up saying, yeah, see you later. I don't want to mess with Iowa.
Yeah, that's been my assumption for most of the months that Joe Milton is going to play. But the longer this thing goes and the closer we get to the bowl game, we're hearing a little bit more. Some of it's speculation, but some of it's from people close enough to the situation to make me wonder if there's something to it. A little more talk that maybe he still could opt out of the bowl game, and I'm not sure. We're going to find out an answer on that really soon because Josh Heupel is kind of cagey with stuff like this just enough that he might not want Iowa to know that Joe Milton's not going to play if that's what's happening. So I could still see Joe Milton opting out of this game. I don't know what's going to happen right now. I've heard just enough conflicting information that I'm not ruling out anything. But, yeah, my assumption for most of the month has been Joe Milton's going to play in this game. The Citrus Bowl being in Orlando, his hometown, that might be the tiebreaker, even if it is a tough call for him. From a draft standpoint, you know, he's got the Senior Bowl that can give him another evaluation opportunity, and that might be better than playing an Iowa team that can really muddy up a game and make it a 17-13 kind of slugfest. That's not really going to be very impressive for a quarterback trying to impress NFL scouts. So I'll be fascinated by that. But obviously a lot of Tennessee fans ready to move on to Nico and get the Nico era started. So I'm sure a lot of people are pulling for that and wanting to see him start this bowl game. But we'll be keeping a close eye on that the next week or two. I wouldn't rule out just yet that Joe Milton still might opt out of this game.
Well, Ryan, really appreciate your perspective as always. Thanks so much for carving out some time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys.
Absolutely. Ryan Callahan from GoVols 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rexwell. We will react to what Ryan had to say, get thoughts from Tennessee fans. Joe, some Tennessee fans freaking out yesterday, which was interesting to watch. I'll get into that more coming up next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click and win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Pick to Click brought to you by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. List your home with TJ to get your home seen, heard, and sold. Also, make sure you check out the Boca Raton Bowl. Bowl season is back. 102.5, 106.3 the game, and 94.9 the fan. Your home for college football bowl games and the college football playoff, presented by Twin Peaks and Parma Tractor and Equipment. Catch the Boca Raton Bowl tonight at 6:30 on 94.9 The Fan as South Florida takes on Syracuse. For a list of games carried on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and 94.9 The Fan, hit up our website at thegamenashville.com/bowl games. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. Thanks to Ryan Callahan for being with us in the last segment. Joe, as he laid out, Tennessee at the moment number 13 in the composite rankings at 24/7 Sports in terms of their recruiting class, which is a good number. Now, having said that, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, who's now a member of the SEC, Auburn, Oklahoma, LSU are all ahead of Tennessee in the rankings in the conference. So while 13 is good, and there's a lot of good players, we think, in that class, and they got a couple of five stars in there as well, a lot of Tennessee fans freaking out yesterday, Joe, of where they're currently placed in the SEC and what that means about how they're going to be able to compete moving forward. What do you think of Tennessee's recruiting class as a whole?
Well, first of all, so when you say freaking out, you know, because it's, I mean, this has been, they've been right in this spot for a while, you know, like it's basically pretty consistent and it's a good spot. I mean, you stack classes like this, they're getting close to the, you know, the blue chip formula, which is essentially that two thirds or 70% of your roster is four or five stars. And the rest of it less, and that's sort of been the formula. If you want to do math on being able to compete for a national championship, you got to have that. So like, and that's, so they freaking out, just is it just like hoping that all of a sudden he was gonna,
yes,
land a few big, but I didn't even know who they were. Like Ryan was saying, there wasn't really anyone other than Seton recently that I know of that was like a huge pursuit, you know what I mean?
I think it's been a combination of the recruiting. They were hoping that a couple more guys maybe you could get in on in the last minute, or the transfer portal being a little bit more active than they have been there.
Yeah. Well, and I get that. I mean, they haven't gone massive in the portal, but I think they've been pretty effective in the portal. And I think it's like, where do they, you know, they've got Ethan Smith, this young tight end they think is going to be a star. But you need more there. Like Castles was a good pickup this year, I thought. I mean, he immediately comes in, you know, and helps out with Jacob Warren and makes some big plays. I think this Notre Dame tight end they got is going to be very important. And I think the Oregon State cornerback is going to be. So, I mean, to me, it's like, did you fill specific needs that are going to translate immediately in the portal to next year? And they did. And also, you know, this isn't sexy, but the fact is, they kept their whole offensive line, and like you want to be better there. You know, you want another Darnell Wright, you know, you want a first round pick, you want, but I still bringing those guys back at tackle and certainly Cooper Mays, that's a big deal, you know, to have that continuity. I think that'll really pay off for them next year. And that area is where I'm looking at, like, okay, where's the recruiting paying off in development in young offensive linemen who are starting to, you know, become really good players for you? That's what I'm not seeing yet. That's one area of a concern, but yeah, I think there's no reason to me to freak out. I mean, so much of it comes down to it's Nico next year, right?
Yeah.
If Nico is what they think he is, what I think he absolutely could be, And what his recruiting profile says, I mean, they're going to absolutely have a chance to be in that 12-team playoff, and that is now the new standard. And that's, you want to get in the tournament, and maybe at some point that Tennessee gets in and they keep losing in the first round, and then you're like, well, that's just not good enough. But I think this is, you stack classes that are, I mean, because they're. So Ryan said they're 13 composite. I think they're by what I'm looking at, 11 in the composite. But regardless, that's pretty good. You know, I mean, it's not like run around and you know, like biggest thing ever. But you stack classes like that year after year after year, and you have continuity and stability. That goes a long way. And then the quarterback position can elevate that, and that's what it's about the next couple of years. They are ahead of Florida now. Boy, did they plummet.
They did. They sure did. No question.
Speaking
about
of
that.
Freaking out, I mean, how about Florida fans? They're ready. You message board geniuses. It's all it is like, just fire them. Just fire them now.
Just go ahead
Please
and get
fire
them. Well, that's why I didn't think, you know, Chasing Big Joe and I had a big discussion about this of like, is Billy Napier going to get fired? I was like, no, he's got the number three recruiting class in America, which he did at the time. And I'm looking at the composite rankings right now, and they've dropped down to 16. They've gone from 3 to 16. Not very good. I mean, it's not like it's a horrible class, but
no.
When you're at 3 and you go to 16, that's a huge difference.
Right. It's not a horrible class, but it's a huge plummet, and that has been the big thing, right? Is like, look at these absolute five-star blue chippers coming in, and a few of them are now elsewhere, and that's he might have a tough go. But that, look, I mean, Florida, talk about a place that badly needs stability, but they can't get out of their own way. It's kind of, it should be fun to watch. The problem is you still can't beat them in the swamp.
There's that. JD from Brentwood on the text line says, this is the first impact of Texas and Oklahoma. Without them, Tennessee would be fourth in the SEC. All teams above them are national powers that Tennessee won't out-recruit. Oklahoma and Texas just bump Tennessee further down. What do you think of that from JD from Brentwood?
Yeah, well, hey, recruiting, playing. I mean, two more tough teams. So it's, so next year Tennessee goes to Oklahoma, right? Yeah, they go to
Yep.
Oklahoma. So that can, yeah, I mean, it's going to be wild, as we just talked about. First of all, determining the two teams that play in the SEC title game when one of them, there will be years where the team, one of the teams in Atlanta is like the fifth best team in the SEC, but they just happen to get the lucky schedule that year. I mean, it's going to be infuriating. Not that they should still have divisions, because when you have a 97 team conference, then you shouldn't do divisions. But there's a lot about this realignment that's going to be stupid. And but hey, I mean, it's the best league. I mean, there is no doubt about that now. So, I mean, Tennessee under Heupel has been about right there. They've been, not up there with Georgia, Alabama, and LSU, but right, and A&M actually, and they're ahead, this year they're ahead of A&M. This year they're ahead of Florida, so that's pretty good. But again, it's also like, I mean, even class rankings, Robbie, like they matter. But I like the so like Colorado, for example, they have the 99th best class,
Yeah.
five dudes. Okay, now maybe they'll get Seton, and that'll help. And that, but they have the number one portal class. So then the combined, they're 21. That's what we, I mean, really, the combined rankings, which I'm trying to find the combined rankings. That's what matters, right? Like, what's
Yeah.
Tennessee combined?
How about Auburn getting into the top seven? Hugh Freeze getting in there and doing some recruiting down there at Auburn, baby.
I mean, Hugh Freeze. That dude, he is forked tongue, man. I mean, that dude is, I mean, he will convince somebody to, someone wearing white gloves to buy a ketchup popsicle. I mean, and then you throw in the NIL, that that place is absolutely, they can't handle where they've gone. So yeah, I'm not surprised.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, it's time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your best things, your worst things on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game.
The best and worst of the sports week, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
On ESPN.
1025, the game, and the Game Nashville app.
This is the worst.
You look like you're feeling sorry for yourself.
I believe in miracles. Yes! Unbelievable.
He's one of one. He is him.
This is a Coke bottle. It's not a crystal ball.
When I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
Okay, let's go.
It is that time of the day, time for the best and worst things in sports. We'll take your submissions as always, 615-737-1025, our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe Rexroad, with that in the background, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
I will say, now that Nick has sent the little, whatever, little video of the kid going, okay, that's good, I kind of think it's cool. But boy, at first I was like, what in the world am I listening to? All right. Well, my best in sports, I gotta say. Wait a minute. Someone's asking, what did I have for breakfast this morning, bud? Language. Wait. I don't know. Sorry. Text line distracted me. I'm gonna go with Drew Lock, and just the pass he threw to Jaxon Smith-Njigba. And the performance he gave in a backup role, and the raw emotion, and also the sideline reporting by Lisa Salters, lives in Nashville, Yep. In that moment, that's my best thing, because that is that should be for anybody. First of all, when all this stuff happened with Clarissa Thompson and, you know, makeup crap, which is just ridiculous, continues to be ridiculous. I heard a lot of, you know, who gives a crap about sideline reporting? Sideline reporting is very important. We don't realize how dependent we are on it as viewers, you know. But sometimes, like, if you don't have it, you're like, wait, I want to know what's going on with the QB who just got hurt or whatever it is. A lot of those interviews are worthless, and it's just like, oh, cliches. And it's like, you know, what I mean, the questions aren't great. But that was such a great example of a reporter letting someone do it, but then also kind of, okay, tell us more. Just tell us more, you know. Let him unload, you know, kind of like just unleash his emotions. It was a fantastic job and what that's supposed to be. So that's my best. Good. My worst is it's just basketball injuries. It's awful. You know, Madison Green is a really promising freshman. Vanderbilt women's basketball best start in a long time. I think 11-2 now. And Madison Green, key reserve off the bench, ACL tear, out for the season. A Destiny Wells, fantastically fun guard from Belmont to Tennessee, transfer, out for the season. Colin Smith, Vanderbilt men's basketball, torn Achilles, out for the season. Awful, awful week.
Yeah, it's not good. Not good at all. And sometimes you run into that in basketball, but it does feel like there's been a lot of that lately, especially around here. So not a good start on that front. Nick Kieser, your best and worst things in the world of sports.
I don't have 30,000 things for you, just so we're clear. So
that's good.
All right. I want to start off with Ivan Marashenko, who debuted with the Washington Capitals last night. This is a really cool story. I didn't really see this until after our Christmas party last night, but he made his debut. But more importantly, 21 months ago, he had Hodgkin's lymphoma, so he overcame that to become a pro hockey player. So kudos to him. So glad to see him beat cancer and was drafted 17 months ago. So I love a feel-good story like that. And really quickly too, Jágr debuted at 51 yesterday in the Czech League. So that's my best. My worst is that the Titans were so close. I mean, this has sat with me all week. I don't know why. It sits with me longer than I thought it would. But in overtime, I cannot believe that they could not finish it. I mean, shouldn't have even gone the overtime, but I just could not believe that they lost in overtime. But look, it doesn't matter at this point. Just kind of would have liked to have seen them win, but that is the worst thing for me this week. So, Robbie, how about you?
Keezer just destroyed, gutted by the Titans' loss to the Houston Texans. Still thinking about it. I respect it. I like it. My best thing, Ja Morant back for the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, I hope, Joe, that throughout this process, he's done a little bit of reflecting and some learning about the behavior that he had last year and just what all went into that. And, you know, we've discussed the Ja Morant stuff from last year, but I hope, like, the suspension really got his attention and that we don't see, you know, any more off the court incidents from him anymore moving forward, because watching him on the court, the guy is sensational. I mean, he's unbelievable to watch. And, you know, the Grizzlies have been terrible this year without him. I am interested to see if he can pull him up enough to make a push to get in the playoffs here. But it was fun to see him back on the court the other night. I was able to catch some of it, even though the Preds game was going on at the same time. But I was able to catch some of it, and he had 34 and won the game for the Grizzlies. Good to see him back on the floor the other night. So that's my best thing in sports. My worst thing in sports, quite simply, is the Titans' offensive line. And I guess we could have probably handed them this award of the worst thing in sports every week of the year to this point.
Maybe if we did yearly, like the worst of the year, they could win.
I feel like this week was especially bad, though. Like, it's, you know, the combination of the pass blocking where you get your quarterback sacked 7 times and hit 11, and then your just complete inability to run the football against Houston. Like, I think last week might have been the worst week when you combine the running game and the passing game. And I know the Cleveland game might give it a really close run there, so you could go either way of how you feel about that. The Cleveland game earlier this year from the offensive line, it was just brutal to watch on Sunday. They couldn't get anything going offensively. So the Titans offensive line, my worst thing in sports.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of totally understandable to some degree talk about a lot of other stuff this week, right? And I mean, look, it's fair to to question the predictability of Tim Kelly on Sunday, the first down runs and all that stuff. I mean, I got Jared yesterday on another losing effort for him and Jared versus Joe. It's like five or six in a row. Who knows?
You're on a roll.
Well, but it's just, you know, and he's like, oh, yes, fire, you know, Tim Kelly and bring in Arthur Smith. I mean, you know, if you're going to have takes like that, you're going to lose. But it is simple. I mean, I'm sorry. Like again, we like the blame pie. I mean, there's like a slice for all the other stuff. There's a slice. And then the whole rest of it is that group. It's just, it's the most, again, I've said it before, like I've watched Jared Goff for many years, and at times he lights it up for the Lions because he has totally clean pockets. But you put Jared Goff here this year, we'd be talking about how is that guy starting in the NFL anymore? He's awful. It's just, it's always going to be what football's about. It's the line of scrimmage. It's the trenches. It's not the fun stuff. It's not the sexy stuff, but it is still always going to be what it's about.
Ben on the text line says, I kind of have two worst things in sports. Why are 6-6 teams making bowl games? I think it's ridiculous. And on top of it, why are 6-6 teams playing 11-2 teams? I think if you have a winning record, you play a team with a winning record. And if you're a ranked team, you play another ranked team in bowl games. It's from Ben on the text line. He'd be really upset when you know, like 5-7 teams make it every now and then.
Yeah. I mean, if the answer is there's so many bowl games, they need to fill them out. And, you know, sometimes it might be a team with that record in a lesser or a better conference than a team, right? With a team with a better record and a lesser. Hey, man, all I know is this has been a consideration as a rampant. Do you like football or do you not like football? Because pretty soon we won't have any anymore. Watch the football. Love the football.
I got a text that says, the worst thing, all the transfers from Vandy. Best thing, lots of signings and transfers in to replenish those defections. It's been a very interesting offseason to this point for the Vanderbilt Commodores. No question.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the portal class is fantastic. There's some interesting stuff on that. I know we have to go to break pretty soon. Jaden McGowan had a big post on social media. Jaden McGowan going to South Carolina. And that's one of the bigger losses. London Humphreys is officially going to Georgia, I believe, now.
Yep.
That's the biggest loss. But Jaden McGowan is definitely, I think, one of the bigger losses. Those guys are both, you know, very talented, great return man, all that stuff. Well, he put this long post because apparently there's been all this stuff about NIL and asking for more money. And he put this long thing about it. That's all BS. He didn't ask for more money. And he said on there, if it was just about money, I would have stayed at Vanderbilt, which is pretty interesting. I mean, it kind of tells you where it was, as we've talked about, you know, and Clark Lee in his way yesterday, he confirmed it too. Like they're throwing the checkbook around, and it's going to be really interesting to see new OC, new offense, new strength coach, Clark Lee is DC, and a whole bunch of, you know, new players. And at this point, they've been flirting with a top 10 portal class. I did not think we would be talking about that. Don't know if it's going to translate to wins, but it is. It's a big development. It's different.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll get into the Preds. They take on the Philadelphia Flyers tonight, trying to get back on the winning path tonight on the road. Andrew Brunette joining us at 7:15 live from Philadelphia. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game.